I'm actually pretty pumped for this.
You've heard the podcast, so you know how it goes. Are you going to want to curse, or should I curtail that?
I myself won't curse, but if you want to curse, go ahead.
Okay.
The following program contains mature language and spoilers. Listener discretion advised.
Yeah, well, let me see. It'll be like, you know, not safe for work, check, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely I checked that box. It's funny, too, when I see some of the early ones that Mac uploaded, and he didn't check that box, I'm like, I should probably go back and re-upload those, because somebody, well, it was funny, too, in the early going, we would get these little comments like, hey, I just realized I can't play this in the car with the kids. Like, yeah, you really can't. This is for the grown, this is dad time, this is man cave time. Welcome to the Marvel Superheroes podcast. I'm not a legal machine, and he's not Count Druncula. We're the other guys.
There's another guy on our show besides us.
Yeah, Ryan shows up every now and again. It's either that or I'd assign you not Paquita, so, you know.
Oh, thank God. Yes, no. No, I'm not Paquita. I'm Mr. Fix-It.
Yeah, and I'm Diablo Frank. And today, I'm going to ask you, Mr. Fix-It, what do you know about Tigra?
She's a performer. She sings. She raps or sings or something. That's about the extent of my Tigra
you
knowledge.
You never read any Tigra stories?
No, dude. Ever? I told you. Dude, the shit you gave me now. I was like, what's her origin? I always thought she was like, I don't know. I remember her popping up in Avenger books, but I never understood who she was. She was always in a bikini. I know that. Like,
yeah, the with the little teeth on it, the tiger.
Yeah, I was kind of like, you know, that's kind of creepy. I guess that's a furry thing. I don't know.
Is she sort of like a traumatized Vietnam vet? Because if she's wearing like tiger teeth or tiger claws around her bikini, isn't that like the equivalent of human ears or something? If she's a tigra?
But then, and her eyes are a tiger, right? Tiger, like she has cat
she's
eyes.
She's got cat eyes, yeah.
Yeah, it's just, she was kind of creepy. I honestly thought she was always one of like the evolutionary's creations.
Where did you see her?
I think I had bought back in 1990s a Marvel swimsuit book that had all the heroes like in swimsuit outfits.
Sure, they did it like that for a couple of 3 years.
Yeah, I have the first one still, and it had like She-Hulk and Tigra and all them in like bikinis, and
it was like their Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue. Yeah,
that's the first time I saw
a lot of artists in those. I think the Hildebrandt did a lot of stuff.
All I know, well, the book which I still have, it's all posters.
It's all cheesecake. Well, they're full page splashes. There are some double pagers as well.
No, no, there's actually two.
That's
where
that
Joe Jesko, poster.
The Joe Jesko Mary Jane picture where she's under the waterfall.
Yeah.
I know you've seen that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, I think you can actually put, because I bought that in the McFarlane one, the Spider-Man from McFarlane one, which they're all posters.
Well, that one I think was, you mean they did a book of just McFarlane Spider-Man. Okay, because remember they used to do Marvel Year in Review too.
Yeah, well, no, this
like
one was
their version of Time or something.
This one was basically like a bunch of covers, and they gave you miniature posters in the book.
Okay.
So you would buy the book and then you have the posters.
Yeah, that sounds vaguely familiar. Yeah. Yeah, I never really bought the poster books that much, though.
So, but that's, I bought those around the same time. So that's the only, if I read anything, it was like, you know, the Infinity Gauntlet where she was killed with a swipe, or she was in the background of an Avengers story where they had all the Avengers hanging out and she's in the back licking her fur or something.
Did you ever watch the old Avengers cartoon from the late 90s, early 2000s?
No.
United We Stand. She was a part of that team.
Nope, never saw it.
So you don't know anything about Tigra, huh?
Nope.
So you've literally read like your first Tigra comic ever today.
Yes.
Huh, okay. Did you listen to the Tigra episode of the Marvel Superheroes podcast?
No.
Motherfucker.
I'm being honest. I don't.
Well, okay, but you were in the cat episode though.
Yeah, I remember the cat episode. Yeah,
this is the same girl.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh my god, is she evolving like a fucking Pokemon now and shit?
Yeah, basically what happened.
Oh my god, what is she now? What's the third stage?
On,
come on.
Okay. Hold on. Let me open up because they've got the origin of these comics that we're looking at today. So let's.
Which,
see.
By the way, he picked up today at our local.
No. I only bought one of them today. The other two I had. Yeah. Okay. Like I said, the name's Tigra, but it used to be Greer Grant, the happy housewife, until something changed all that, and a brilliant scientist, Dr. Joanne Tomolo, took a young widow and turned her into the superheroine known as the Cat. But the Cat didn't last very long because a burst of deadly alpha radiation nearly wasted me just about the time that I learned about a hidden race of cat people on the Earth, and they saved my life by making me one of them, a werewoman, Tigra.
Wow.
So the Cat, who you read a story about.
Yeah.
So she was part of this scientific program. She gets a cool yellow and blue suit with the ejectable claws and stuff, and she's basically sort of like a Catwoman type heroine. But then she gets shot by a Hydra agent with radiation. She's going to die. So Dr. Tomolo turns out to secretly be part of a werecat people. She herself can turn into a cat woman. And she shoots Greer Grant with this ray that makes her into the Tigra. And so then she has those adventures. Didn't you read that story where the weird creature like eats the guy's soul cum or some shit like that?
No, I would remember that.
Okay, so first she was in the cat series. It ran 4 issues. Then she was in a Werewolf by Night annual, which is where she became Tigra the Werewoman. And then she was in one of those horror anthology books that Marvel put out, a black and white story. It was really dark and weird and messed up. Let's wiki Tigra to get folks up to speed. Writer Tony Isabella recounted, "My memory may be a bit shaky here, but I recall the giant size books were approved and put on the schedule without a lot of lead time. I think I got the assignment one day, pitched the idea on the next, and one day later was sitting down with Roy Thomas and Gil Kane to work out what Tigra would look like." He also names Don Perlin and John Romita Sr. as having a hand in Tigra's appearance, and credits Thomas with coming up with the name. Tigra made her solo feature debut with a 15-page story in the black and white horror magazine Monsters Unleashed, number 10, from February 1975, followed by a brief run in the Umbrella series Marvel Chillers, issues number 3 through 7, cover dated February through October 1976, and one more solo story in Marvel Premiere number 42 from June of 1978. Like the cat, Marvel Chillers was canceled due to struggling sales. So we're trying to pick up kind of where we left off, and the first of the titles is Marvel Chillers number 4, which was a fill-in issue by Chris Claremont, Frank Robbins, and a surprisingly unobtrusive Vince Coletta to keep the book on schedule, even though it was only the second issue of her solo strip up to that point, and the book was a bi-monthly. The story diverted Tigra from her weeks pursuing Joshua Plague and the Rat Pack by accidentally stumbling upon Kraven the Hunter at the University of Chicago, where she'd first met Dr. Tomolo and become the cat. This happened because it was a Chris Claremont script, and that gave him an excuse to have Tigra monologue her entire comics career up to that point, plus get angsty over the werewoman slipping humanity. Kraven was kidnapping a Dr. Malraux. What is it with this character and doctors with screwy names? It's spelled M-A-L-R-A-U-X. God, this is painful. So Dr. Malraux had been doing research that would have given the hunter an upgrade in his abilities. Basically, he was in neurosciences. However, a girl had been shot in the spine by Kraven's men, so the neurosurgeon was Tigra's only chance of saving the kid from permanent paralysis and or sudden death. Being extra greedy, Kraven now also wanted to take Tigra to study her, as he was aware of the cat people and thought their science might also enhance his virility. Oh, and to show everyone how hard he was, Kraven straight up massacred some dudes, but that's just a side note. Anyway, having studied the legendary cat people, Kraven knew he could hurt them by overwhelming their enhanced senses, but the werewoman eventually turned the tables on him. She thinks, "I went mad there, and whatever there was of Greer Nelson within me fled screaming into the dark, leaving only Tigra." Poor Kraven didn't notice the difference until he was too late, and his sonic blasters were a slashed ruin. With my second strike, I drew blood, and the Kraven was as good as dead. Oh, he tried to fight me, and each time I smashed him down, until he stopped trying to get up, and both of us knew my next strike would tear open his throat. Lord forgive me, I did so want to kill him, but I didn't. Instead, I threw him away. The doc saved the little girl, though she'd need a year of therapy to recover. The police thought Tigra might be in league with Kraven and wanted to question her, but she bolted under the cover of a forced caged cat, and I can never go home to my humanity again metaphor. Marvel 2-in-1 number 19. It's from 1976. The story is called Claws of the Cougar. It's by Bill Mantlow, Sal Buscema, Don Heck. I read this story at your birthday.
Okay.
I got bored and I brought some comics with me and I just read it during
that's my right. My birthday was that boring.
Well, you had a lot of like groups of people that didn't really know each other. So everybody wanted to hang out with you. And when you or other people I knew weren't around to talk to, I would just read this comic. Basically, Tigra manages to break into the Baxter building because the thing was screwing around and he accidentally knocked out the security system. She like climbs into his bedroom window and she can't wake him up because he's a big stony thing. So she uses her claws to break one of the legs of his bed and knock him on the floor. And he's like, "Hey, what the fuck?" And so she's trying to explain, "Yeah, you know, I need the Fantastic Four's help with this renegade cat person called the Cougar." Something else in 1976 versus what it means today. It's weird to even think about a man cougar at this point because we're so used to that term now. So, and Ben Grimm doesn't care. He just starts working out with his exercise equipment, barely paying attention to the Catwoman talking to him about this stuff. But she tells her origin, and then she reminds him that the Fantastic Four fought this creature, this giant celestial-looking creature called Tomazuma. And it's sort of like an Aztec celestial. And so they beat him and they blow him up. And what they don't realize is that he had these weapons called the no bands. And apparently they never managed to get around to recovering these things. And so the cougar has gotten control of the no bands. So as Tiger's explaining this through the thing, some henchmen break in and try to kill the two of them because, again, Ben Grimm knocked out the damn security system. And he makes a bunch of references to that.
Like he always does.
So they beat up the henchmen, and then they manage to trace the cougar back to this scientific organization, some company. Do they give it a name? Well, anyway, they trace it back to some kind of bullshit high-tech company. And there's this dude named Kurt, and he's got Namor eyebrows, so you know he's evil. And he's talking to this blonde chick named Sheila. And apparently Sheila is the Carol Ferris of whatever fucking company this is. She brought this guy in to help save the company from bankruptcy. Whatever the nature of our relationship, I can't have you taking money from out of the books to pay for some thugs to do something, and I don't even know what's going on. And he sort of brushes her off. So she leaves, and then Tigra and the thing show up, and he manages to capture them. His plan is, with the combination of the null bands and his scientific equipment, he wants to drain all the powers from the Fantastic Four into himself. And so he starts to try to do that, but the thing is just way too strong and just busts out of his shackles like it's nothing.
Okay.
And so the dude's like, okay, well, you know, this stupid pink human form isn't doing me any good, so I'm going to become the cougar. And he becomes this anthropomorphic creature with the null band, so he's blasting these energy blasts. And he blasts the thing who jumps in the way of Tigra to save her life. And apparently the null bands aren't powerful enough to kill the thing with one blast. They do knock him out, though. So, you know, the threat level just keeps diminishing. But they're all fighting each other. The cougar looks like he's going to have the upper hand because he grabs this positive charge annihilator that's supposed to completely blow the thing and Tigra to bits.
Yeah.
Well, then why don't you use that instead of the stupid null bands? You know, that would work better. But just as he's about to use it, Sheila shoots him in the back. And Tigra's like, the cat people have learned how to be clever in hiding their true forms of humanity, Miss Conklin. You couldn't have known. Oh, but I did. I knew what Kurt, the cougar, was. But I also knew that he was a brilliant scientist. And I knew that Conklin Industries was in trouble and needed his mind. I used him as I allowed him to believe he was using me. Then why did you stop him just as he was about to consolidate his power? Power you might have used. Perhaps I learned something while watching him. Perhaps I saw how sick and twisted people can become when they lust after power and allow themselves to be consumed by greed. The end.
Mm.
Check it out.
See, that's the weird thing is she's in this tight, tight little bikini all the time. That's really strange.
It was the 70s. They were more liberated then.
But you didn't have Sue Richards, I'm sure, running around in a bikini or...
Well, yeah, but she was everybody's mom, so they didn't think of her like that.
So then she was more of a hot aunt that was single, newly single, running free.
She's the cougar fighting the cougar. She had been married. She was a widow.
Okay.
Paging Dr. Ange. Paging Dr. Ange.
Good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing well.
Welcome to the Marvel Superheroes Podcast. I'm Diablo Frank, and with me is my special guest, Dr. Ange from Supergirl Comic Box Commentary.
Hey, thanks for inviting me. I've been looking forward to this podcast, being a guest here for a while.
God, it's been way too long for us to get around to doing this, man.
I know. I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, I mean, you've only been one of my favorite bloggers for years, and I've heard you on all these other people's shows, and only now do I finally get to talk with you myself.
Well, I have to say that I'm pretty sure that yours was one of the first character-driven blogs that I discovered that kind of made me think that I should go in that direction. I've been listening to all of your podcasts, and I clearly have a lot to say, so I'm glad we're finally getting together.
We've been doing the whole Mutual Admiration Society thing for about, what, 6 or 7 years now?
At least.
It's about time we got this thing done. But first, I have one more bit of recapping to do. Covering Tiger's appearances from Fantastic Four number 177 through 186, cover dated December 1976 through September 1977. The Fantastic Four were captured by the Frightful Four, except there were only three, so the Up and decided to audition for a fourth while the imprisoned First Family looked on and mocked the Osprey, Texas Twister, Captain Ultra, and a long line of even bigger losers. Also, former member Thundra tried to save the Fantastic Four, but got knocked out. Tiger showed up later and was smart enough not to try to take on the Wizard, the Trapster, and the Sandman, all by her lonesome. Instead, she used her feminine wiles to distract them until she could free the Thing and Human Torch. It took two of the Frightful Four to take down Tigra, and they were said they were sick of skirts like Medusa and Thundra betraying them. The Frightful Three took down the rest with a timely assist from the Brute, who was the evil version of Reed Richards from Counter-Earth I'm not even getting into. The Impossible Man ultimately freed everybody, and a Tigra still bound by Pete's Pot Paste joined Invisible Girl in defeating the Wizard, but not his misogynistic incredulity about that fact. There's a fill-in issue by Jerry Conway and Ron Wilson, where Tigra flirts with a Ben Grimm already put out by Thundra trying to get into his blue trunks despite his love for Alicia Masters. Then they fight on molten robot together. Next, there's a filler reprint of issue 101 by Lee and Kirby, and by the time we get back to the main story, Tigra, Thundra, and Impossible Man have been malingering so long that Reed Richards throws them out of the Baxter Building. Except, in the grand finale, it turns out the counter-Earth Reed Richards had swapped places with the real Mr. Fantastic and stranded him in the negative zone, requiring a whole guest creative team of Bill Mantlow and Sal Buscema to muster the Lovely Lady League, led by Sue Richards, to rescue the dudes from the Mad Thinker and a bunch of other villains who snowballed into this thing. George Perez returned with new writer Lynn Wein for the literal cleanup, where Thing tried to get Tigra and Thundra to help tidy up the wreckage in the Baxter Building, but they claimed housework was demeaning and showed themselves out. Sadly, at the curb, Tigra got catty over how neither made any traction with Ben Grimm, and they went their separate ways in a huff.
Tigra, part woman, part tiger, giving her incredible athletic ability and cat-like reflexes.
The harder they are, the bigger they fall.
So Claremont guest wrote this script for Marvel Chillers number 4, and then John Byrne guest drew her in issue 6, which was another issue that involved her being chained up, which she also has happened to her, in Marvel Team-Up number 67, cover dated March 1978 by Chris Claremont, John Byrne, and Dave Hunt. So the story's called Tigra, Tigra, Burning Bright, and it starts out with Spider-Man sort of just swinging through town, trying to get some school stress out of the way, even though he really doesn't have time for the nonsense. But he's out looking for trouble, he finds it, and it turns out to be Kraven the Hunter.
One of my issues with Spider-Man is that I think that his Spider-Sense power is so vague that it can either work very well or not at all, depending upon what the writer wants to have happen. And so Spider-Man says, like, I see a guy, I'm going to jump over there, and then he just gets taken out with one punch by Kraven. I've seen him dodge people going at near light speed because his Spider-Sense tells him that they're going to go one way. This seemed a little bit too easy. And of course, if you've knocked him out, Kraven, why not just kill him? That's a classic supervillain mistake.
I've read a fair amount of Spider-Man, but the period when I was reading Spider-Man was in, I think, the mid-80s, early to mid-80s. At that point in time, they were really pushing some of the newer characters like Hobgoblin and the Rose and, you know, guys that really don't have much resonance today, apparently, but I still have an affection for them. And so I would see Kraven, but I didn't really read a lot of his story. So I didn't realize how prone he was to gimmick stuff. He tries to fake out Spider-Man with a punch, and then instead he shoots him with darts that were out of this wrist projector. And I think at one point he shoots gas out of the eye holes in his lion mane shirt. And I didn't realize he was basically Deathstroke before Deathstroke.
Yeah, this is probably the most gimmicky that I've seen him, because usually I just think of him as being like, I'm going to lure somebody into a hunt and kill them. Because even the technology that we see him using later on Tigra, seems a little bit off for him. So this does seem a little bit strange for even my interactions with Kraven.
I think it might be a Claremont thing, because in the Chiller story, he was also gimmick prone. What do you think about Kraven in general, though?
You know, I can understand that there's a most dangerous game aspect that you could see that maybe somebody who is a great hunter would now want to hunt these super beings to prove how great they are. But in all honesty, really, he should have no business fighting Spider-Man. Spider-Man, he's just a guy, right? So Spider-Man should just be able to destroy him in my mind. So I'm not a big fan of him going against. Now, maybe going against somebody like, yes, even Daredevil has too many powers. If he's going against more street-level people, I think that that would make a little bit better sense for me.
Again, since I didn't have a lot of exposure to Kraven, one of the first things I really got to read was Kraven's Last Hunt, because that was coming out monthly. It was drawn by Mike Zeck, so I was picking that up. I didn't read the whole thing. I just got the issues I could actually find on the newsstand back when you didn't have the option of pre-ordering books. I thought he was fairly cool in Last Hunt, and I've always loved the visual of the character. It's the kind of thing that just, it never works in anywhere besides comics, but I think it works extremely well in comics. And I kind of bothers me. I wish they hadn't killed him off. I think that they'd have been better served just upping his powers some, because he didn't just have to stay a slightly enhanced, or I'm not even sure he was really at all enhanced human being. I realize that they try to make a point of that, to where he's trying to show that he can do it naturally, but you read these stories and he's trying to find all these different gimmicks to up himself anyway. I don't understand why they didn't just give him a, you know, go to the power broker or something and give him some super strength, some enhanced reflexes, and then he could go right back to doing what he was doing without having to go through the whole suicide thing.
Yeah, in my mind, I have images that must be true of him like drinking a potion out of a gourd that's like, you know, in my time in Africa, I've learned how to give myself temporary super strength. But I think you're right, they should have just given him heightened senses or something that made him such a good hunter that would then explain why he's doing this or how he's able to hang in there.
What do you think of his look?
I agree with you that it can only work in comics, because if you had somebody with this half lion mane vest, it would just look absolutely ridiculous. He's covered with the fur of just about every great cat that there is. I wonder if he would look better with like a helmet, you know, or
his hair, he pretty much already has a helmet.
Yeah, you know, like a bear skull as a hat.
Oh, kind of like a Red Wolf thing.
Yeah.
I can kind of see that, but I kind of dig in with the porn stash and just like being a dude.
Yeah.
I love that the vest with the fur is actually the lion's mane and incorporates like this lion into his motif. It reminds me a lot of Timberwolf. But I think he's pretty fierce given that the guy's running around in leopard print cigarette pants that he looks like he ran out of Peggy Bundy's closet.
Yeah, you know, part of it, you know, looking at him in this issue now, kind of looks like Freddie Mercury a little bit.
He does, yeah. Well, what I was thinking is if you were to cast him in a movie in that time period, Burt Reynolds.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right.
I'm specifically when he, later in the issue where he's sort of lounging and he kind of looks like the Playgirl spread a little bit to me.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can definitely see the Freddie Mercury too because he's got that voluptuous mustache. Plus he's kind of got that squareness in his head too.
Yeah.
Mercury had that sort of like Zadar, the fellow from Maniac Cop.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he kind of has that kind of big, like head, disproportionately large head thing or blocky head thing. And then, of course, I do, another thing, I'd have probably gotten him some boots though because those strappy slippers aren't really working for me.
Yeah, too dainty, I would think, for a big time hunter.
He looks like the ultimate alpha male at the world's most macho yoga studio. I picture him like put the hunting rifle into his mouth and just say namaste and then
or, you know, he would be like hot yoga, right? Where he'd be like, you know, like the steamy jungle. We will, you know, sweat ourselves clean.
Oh, dear God. Yeah. He would definitely have a cheesy pickup line like that. The dude's a total pickup artist. Oh, God, Nevin. Oh, man. One thing, too, I got to say is I really miss this John Byrne. It's like sometime after Next Men faltered, it seemed like he went and he had this style where everything looked a little like choppy and everybody looked a little too emaciated. It's like somebody who looks good when they've got a little bit of fat on them and then they suddenly like drop a bunch of weight and they just don't look right. They look kind of sickly to you. And that's been like John Byrne's art for 20 odd years now.
This is where I first met him. I will tell you that I probably bought the 12 issues of this year of Marvel Team Up because I really loved those stories and I really loved the art. This is really, I think, sort of maybe at the height of his powers, maybe the X-Men stuff. But I agree with you. The recent stuff just doesn't look quite right.
Yeah, as much as I liked him on Superman, he spent a lot of time getting inked by Dick Giordano. I thought there was an okay combination, but I wasn't super wild about it. And was it Carl Kessel who was doing action?
Yeah.
Now, Kessel I thought looked good on him, but most people think that, you know, Terry Austin was the ultimate. All I know is that the only person who shouldn't ink John Byrne is John Byrne. Everybody seems to enhance him. Even whoever, I don't know Dave Hunt from Adam, but he's done a pretty good job here.
Yeah, I agree. Did you like his Hulk stuff?
No, not so much on that one. That one always felt like this sort of extraneous thing, and he was there for so little time that he made a lot of changes, he shook a bunch of stuff up, and then he was just out the door, like a serial renovator, serial brand new direction guy.
Yeah, I think him leaving West Coast Avengers was probably the first time that I was like, what the hell, right? I mean, because he had done a whole lot of plot lines. I know that he had brought the Scarlet Witch story to conclusion, but there were still a bunch of subplots that were out there, and then all of a sudden the next issue is clearly an inventory story of Hawkeye fighting Hydro Man, and I was like, what the hell just happened?
Yeah, and it's funny too, all these years later, West Coast Avengers, his brief run, or actually it was Avengers West Coast, right? He flipped it when he came on. So many people still regard that run so well that it really is a crying shame he didn't stick around longer.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the things where I think that he made changes that made sense for the time, and I can only imagine with social media now how people would react, but the whole story about, you know, dehumanizing the Vision and bringing Wonder Man back in and then the issues with Scarlet Witch, all of that felt very fresh at the time, and I thought was good directions for those guys.
Yeah, and then of course there was the Wonder Man blowjob.
Yes, exactly right. That we did.
John Byrne has predilections. We're just going to have to own that. Okay, yeah. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, remember, he also did the Superman Big Barda porno story.
Well, I thought that they did there was a podcast I listened to recently, I think it was Michael Bailey, who did an effective job of countering that argument that he said that didn't actually happen, that was something we all kind of just drew in our own minds because we were perfect little boys.
Well, you know, there's definitely a picture of her dancing provocatively, and there's definitely a point when he has Superman under control, and I'm pretty sure that he says, I think he would be too rough to do a movie with anybody talking about Superman, so I may just have to have him be a one-man film, I assume meaning that there would be images of him masturbating. So I'm pretty sure that panel is out there. If I can find it, I'll send it to you.
The walls of Kleenex, yes.
Exactly.
I'm pretty sure, I think that Bailey had a sound argument. I don't think that there's a Superman bar to porno, but I'm pretty sure there's a bar to stag reel a la Betty Page out there somewhere.
No doubt.
So getting back to the story, Spider-Man wakes up from the poison dart, and he's in this sort of African lounge with a flaming pit in front of him, and then Tigra is on the couch with Kraven with a leash, a chain leash on her, and Kraven's all like, "Welcome to my humble home, old enemy. My pet and I are pleased to see you finally awake." Kraven would be like such a social media pariah. This guy has just the most retrograde troglodyte views of humanity, much less women.
It looks like, you know, come up and see my African etchings. You know, I'm the ultimate macho man feel to him.
I'd still vote for him over Trump. I think he'd be a great candidate for the Republican Party, though, in 2020. He's a true outsider, a social conservative, definitely a free market economist. He's definitely going to cut the social safety net. Kraven's your man, I think. And I'd trust him more with the new codes, to be honest, because I don't think he'd see it as fair. He'd really want you to get in there with like punji sticks and you know, setting traps for your enemies. But I do think he would get into North Korea on his own and solve that particular problem.
Yeah, he strikes me as a almost comedian-like. I'm surprised that America hasn't hired him.
Kraven's a big life-for-life kind of guy. What he's decided is he's allowed Spider-Man to live so that he and Tigra can have a fight to see who survives. And I assume that part of this is getting revenge on Tigra for humiliating him in Marvel Chillers number 4. But the thing is, she's got this collar on that's mind control. Controlling her, and perhaps Kraven believes this is uninhibiting her so that she can like lunge and attack Spider-Man with her full ferocity to show that if Tigra can beat Spider-Man, that maybe he doesn't feel so bad about how he got whooped like a redheaded stepchild by her.
Spider-Man does make a point of saying things like, "She's attacking me like an animal, she's going for the jugular, she's hard to hold."
One specific line that I liked was, "Stopped her, but just barely. Way she's wiggling, it'd be easier to hold a greased pig." And I'm wondering, when was the last time anybody saw somebody wrestle a greased pig? How is that? That's not a frame of... We don't have Green Eggers on television anymore. I mean, there's no frame of reference for that anymore. It's just, it's such a thing that when, even in the 80s, I think it'd be kind of a stretch to reference greased pigs. I remember when I was a kid, I was at a rodeo and I saw a guy try to climb a greased pole, and that was a long time ago. So just a bizarre thing to... It's just one of those cognitive dissonances like, wow, I'm definitely reading an old book at this point.
Yeah. I'll tell you, living in New England, I never saw any of those things.
I'm certain. Yeah, the century rolled a little slower down south. But one thing that was kind of squeaky to me too is they made a point of saying that Spider-Man's only trying to contain Tigra, where Tigra's trying to kill him. And I thought that was a nice way of explaining how the power disparity would work, because I think we probably agree that Tigra's not as powerful as Spider-Man, but it still comes off a little sexist.
I agree. It does remind me in some ways, remember, you know, like the Superman-Batman fight in Dark Knight Returns, where Superman is really holding back. I feel that that's sort of the way Spider-Man is doing it sort of here, right? Because he could easily take her out if he wanted to.
Yeah. And it was a fun panel where Spider-Man realizes that she's being controlled by the collar. He like scrapes away part of the collar during the fight and he sees this circuitry. But it's funny because he sits there for a minute like a total science nerd trying to work out how the collar works. But ultimately, he just rips the damn thing off.
And some of it doesn't make too much sense to me from a science point of view. There's a theory that an intense electromagnetic field could be used to screw up the normal operation of a person's brain. But how that leads to mind control, I have no idea. And where the heck did Kraven get this technology? Maybe the Tinkerer owed him a favor.
Stick to the soap opera, Claremont.
Exactly.
Once Tigra's free, they go ahead and they give you a flashback to the Marvel Chiller story and explain how she was having an investigation and she stumbles upon Kraven and they'd had their previous battles. This is a self-contained story. It references a previous story which was also self-contained. And to me, that's the cool continuity, where if you happen to read that other story, you're like, oh yeah, cool, they're referencing it. And if you haven't read it, they told you everything you needed to know about it. It's not this Byzantine continuity where you've got to read 18 different books. That's the kind of continuity is cool, that little thing where it's like, yes, this is all happening in one universe, but you don't have to remember every tiny little bit of minutia. It's just like, oh yeah, these two fought before, he's probably still pissed about it, and that's why they're fighting now.
Yeah, I didn't even know that other story existed, and I read this just fine. I just assumed, yeah, probably somewhere in the past these two have met. He's a hunter, she's a tiger. It did flow pretty good, and I can only imagine that if you had read that other story that you would have a better appreciation. But the best stories you should be able to read on your own.
Well, I mean, this is professional wrestling continuity. The amount of plot in this book is only there to set up people fighting. And I'm totally fine with that for a nice little one-issue slugfest. That's all I needed. This person hates this person for this reason. Fight!
Yeah. You know, and I think that's probably the purpose of these team-up books back then, right? Is that, you know, people probably didn't know Tigra existed. So let's write a story that's a decent showcase for her that shows her powers and gives a little bit of her history.
Well, and again, it's funny too, because Claremont wrote her that one time, burned her that one time. They might have gone, hey, yeah, Tiger, yeah, that Tiger. And then boom, we got a story. It doesn't all have to be a convention in some remote location where an entire writer's group gets together to figure out how to have people punch other people.
Yeah.
But I also like too that Craven, and again, you said this is a bit of an anomaly, but I like that Craven actually has to put a lot of thought into all these traps he set up for them. And he has to get the circuitry, and he's trying to find ways to enhance himself. And it's like people think of Craven as kind of a dummy, that he just goes out and tries to spear Spider-Man out of nowhere. And I like seeing that, no, this guy is more than that. He would have to be in order to be a formidable challenge to Spider-Man.
Yeah, he can't just be a human. He needs to have all of this other stuff. And, you know, he does a good job of incorporating it into his costume. So I guess I got to give him some props.
And they explained that the collar is a mnemonic scrambler. And I couldn't find a reference for the Cat Number One. But I really hope that this was a callback to that first issue, that it's the same collars that Doctor, other guy, person with a weird name, was using to mind control his brother and the proto cat that died jumping around against her will.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember that part now.
Craven also says, "You will be my willing slave, cat thing, forever." I think his definition of willing is a little bit funkier than the rest of us. There's some blurred lines there.
Yeah, but it's perfect for his character that he would think that.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Oh, this guy, I just listened to the Film and Water podcast where they're talking about High Fidelity, and a lot of their conversation is about how the lead character, Rob, is so in his head, he doesn't realize the emotional debris that's collecting behind him from all the damage he's doing to all these other people's lives, not realizing that he's the one who's really the author of his own heartbreaks.
And yeah.
Craven would definitely be like that, but far, far worse.
Yeah, he just seems so toxic, masculine, the worst example of all of that.
And it's funny, because this book doesn't have enough plot to read too much into it, but it's just absolutely dripping with subtext, and it stinks of testosterone and those awful colognes with the pheromones put in them. Maybe a little Axe body spray, too.
Yeah, I mean, that first panel where we see her, like, lounging next to him, I mean, she just has this, you know, sensual aspect about her whole character, the way she's poised, the look on her face. So you know that it hasn't been a chaste relationship between the two of them.
I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to do that. Yeah, now I'm getting Jessica Jones flashbacks.
Only one man on Earth is man enough to win her.
Oh no, why do we have to do that? Okay, so the pure hunting cat has been reined in, and they go chasing after Craven, who knows better than trying to take him on, you know, in a fair fight, especially both of them at once. And so they bust out of the African tent, and it turns out that they're in Jersey on some safari park, and they're almost immediately beset by a stampede of zoo animals that apparently were left fallow after this safari park had gone into bankruptcy, which, as much as I'm wanting to just like let everything of this book wash over me and just like let it be what it is, I just can't help but thinking about how, wouldn't the animals be bankruptcy assets, and wouldn't you actually be selling them off to make back those losses? And PETA surely would have gotten involved, and I just can't let that aspect, of all the things I can let go in this story, I can't let that go.
It's so true, because I had the same exact feeling. I'm like, it makes absolutely no sense that New Jersey would just say, okay, let's let lions and elephants and giraffes roam next to our shores. To me, it almost felt like Byrne had drawn all of this in the Marvel style and had reached the end of the script that Claremont had given him, and they were like, we've got five more pages to fill. They're like, I know, let's throw a stampede in. That'll be fun.
And that's another one of those references, too. When every night of the week a major network had a Western on, stampedes made all kinds of sense. In a modern context, you're like, what the hell's a stampede? What is that? What is even happening here? Why is this even happening? How would you even get giraffes and rhinos and elephants to all stampede at the same time? Where's the fire? Yeah. Well, and I love, too, they make a point of having that line where Craven trained each animal to obey his every command. He actually took the time to train every single one of those animals so they could have them stampede en masse. This is the best thing this guy has to do with his time.
Yeah, and it's really a diverse group. It's giraffes. I see, like, a yak. There's what looks to be a bear. He should be out fighting superheroes more. I mean, that's, like, years worth of training, I'm sure.
That would mess Daredevil up. That's an argument in favor of Craven as a Daredevil villain, because I think a stampede of animals in Jersey would mess Daredevil all kinds up.
Hell's Kitchen.
And why didn't you just, okay, if you're controlling Tiger with his collar, just throw collars on all the rest of them too, and then you don't have to explain all this stuff. So the stampede's coming, and, you know, Spider-Man and Tiger are just going to go and meet this thing. And one of those things I love that they don't do enough in comics anymore is Spider-Man makes a point of thinking about how he's impressed that Tiger's able to crowd surf over these animals with such speed and agility that, you know, is greater than his own. And it was just nice to give Tiger that moment and that props. It's like, wow, she could do something that Spider-Man can't do.
Yeah, you know, again, this should be a showcase for her, right? You know, the assumption is that if you're buying this book, you're already a Spider-Man fan, and now let's make you a Tiger fan.
Well, see, I'm wondering if maybe this is one of those things like the whole Peter David, Eric Larson deal, where Eric Larson had Dr. Octopus beat the Hulk to show that he'd upped Dr. Octopus's power levels, and Peter David, writer of the Hulk, didn't appreciate that. So then he turned around and had the Hulk take out Dr. Octopus, was like a flick of his finger in a few pages of one of his issues, and that was the start of their long-standing feud, just because they couldn't let that thing go. And I'm wondering if maybe this being a Spider-Man fronted title, if there wasn't some issues with Tiger taking out Kraven, and it was them having an opportunity to bring Kraven back from that.
Yeah, I can understand that. I got you.
Tiger manages to get past the stampede and tackle Kraven, and they fight, and then Kraven just gives her this backhand punch and says, "I'll do with you what I please, cat thing." And I love that panel where I think it's a solid blue, and Tiger's wiping her mouth and just says, "Wanna bet?" I'd buy that t-shirt.
It's really a great moment for her, because I think it kind of shows that there is this ferocity in her and that she isn't some guy's plaything. I see that panel and I just know in my heart that now she's going to defeat Kraven, right? Because she's made this bold statement. And then you read the next panel.
I've spent months studying cat people. He hits her with ultrasonics, and then she's down and she doesn't do another thing. Except that he's going to put another collar on her, and suddenly this collar is the one that will work forever till the day you die. It's like, but the one, he just ripped off the other one. Why? Don't make statements you can't back up, dude.
When we're done reviewing the story, I think I could poke 100 holes in what he's doing here. I really just don't understand it. because if I could kill Spider-Man and keep Tigra as a slave, that might be a better course of action for me than having them fight each other and then losing a battle.
It's definitely counterintuitive. Yes, I would have to agree with that. Not very productive. This is a guy, though, clearly logic is not one of his strong suits.
I didn't think about the fact that this might be his way of trying to, you know, assuage his own hurt masculinity that she defeated him, that if she can defeat Spider-Man, then it all makes sense.
I love that you said hurt masculinity, because that made me think of butthurt, and then that made me think of his leopard print tights, and it just created an image there. I'm picturing Tiger pegging him, to be honest with you. I'm just going to go ahead and say it outright. But one instance where Tiger still gets to look cool, though, is all this has been happening and Spider-Man is still jumping around the stampede trying to get past it. He's still riding rhinos and stuff trying to get to the fight. And so he sees that Tiger is losing, throws a web softball at Kraven's head while also acknowledging that he's not the most sporty athletic type of dude. So he's actually happy that he lucked out and managed to bop him on the noggin.
He makes a very timely reference comparing himself to Tom Seaver. In 1979 or whenever this book was, Tom Seaver was a very good pitcher.
I'm not going to lie. You have to explain that joke to me. You know I'm not remotely a sports fan. I don't even know who that guy is. Was he the baseball player that Jack Death had to save in Trancers so that his family line would continue? That's the frame of reference I got.
No, so Tom Seaver is, you know, when you think of pitchers in baseball that define an era for their excellence, Tom Seaver is one of them from the 70s. This would be like saying, I'm no Roger Clemens if you were in the 90s, right?
I've heard of Roger Clemens. I know that guy. I've heard of him.
I'll try to think of a Texas Rangers baseball player, but I still don't think I'll have any luck.
You don't have to do, if you really want to stick with the major media, there's no niche in sports that you're going to be able to fill with me, even if it's a local team.
Yeah, maybe if he said something like, because Nuke LaLoosh I'm not, maybe you would get that, right? He's the pitcher from the movie Bull Durham.
Okay, yeah, I haven't seen that one in a long time, so I wouldn't even get that one. But I'm just loving how I put out a dialogue balloon and there's an asterisk and you just filled in the editor's note. In another episode of our heroes not really looking that competent, Spider-Man, after throwing the ball, falls into the stampede, but it's okay. He only gets trampled by a few animals. And I just did a quick skim read through Demon Knights, where the character Horsewoman, her entire family is killed in a stampede and she's crippled by it. And it's like, well, at least Spider-Man's got that over on her. Yeah, so he gets up and he's just like, oh, I've just got a few cuts and bruises. I'll be okay. And Tigra's doing the woman thing. Oh, are you okay? Let me check on you. Kind of mothering him a little bit. They've completely blown off Kraven at this point. And so Kraven like sneaks up behind them and he's like, look, I've got Spidey sense, sucker. You know, forget about that. But they make a point of him saying he punches him in the belt buckle and it knocks him out. And is there subtext there? Is that subtext?
It has to be. Let me punch you in the junk and end it.
I think after getting trampled on by the stampede, he had some stuff he needed to work out with old Kraven there.
But even here, it's one of those things where Kraven pulls out tusks that have been dipped in black mamba poison that will kill them. And it's like, why have you been saving that? You know, you could have used that at any point.
Well, and again, if it's really tusks, that means probably a dead elephant, which means he's a scumbag.
Yeah.
You know, like they keep reinforcing that, and it only gets worse with the passage of time. Picturing him on Twitter standing over the elephant that he hunted himself, and everybody, yes, like, yes! Psst, hiss, psst.
Yeah, holding up the severed trunk and everybody booing him. But of course, Spider-Man does make a point of saying, it's like, oh, you can't sneak up on me when I have spider sense. You should know that by now. And I'm like, he snuck up on you 20 pages ago and punched you. So this is like, well, even within this issue.
In Kraven's defense, Spider-Man did detect him. He just didn't realize who he was messing with and underestimated him. So in defense of the Spidey sense.
And now, like, as I'm flipping back, I think he actually says at some point, you know, oh, here it is on like the third panel of page two. Even my spider sense seems to be taking a night off. So maybe they're trying to say he wasn't quite, his mind wasn't in the whole patrol thing. I don't know. I'm making a lot of excuses for this book.
But we had fun with it, and that's why we're willing to make the excuses.
I will say that I think that this wasn't the best vehicle to learn about Tigra, because she's mind controlled most of it, but I'm certainly glad it's part of my collection.
I'll talk to him, Hank. After all, I asked him to come.
And go to Marvel Premiere featuring Tigra the Feline Fury, issue number 42 from 1978.
Okay.
And the cover's by Dave Cockrum. It's pretty cool looking. She's fighting a woolly mammoth on the cover. And nice. It says Nightmare in New Orleans. And then you get to the interiors, it's called Nightmare's Evolution. The plot's by John Warner, who I don't know. I know John Wagner. I thought that he was doing work for Marvel. I don't know who John Warner is. Oh, and Ed Hennigan. The art is by Mike Vosburgh and Ernie Chan. And Ernie Chan really dominates with his inks. It looks like an Ernie Chan story to me. The script is by Ed Hannigan. This guy's dead, and he's name dropped. And Tigra is like on the run from somebody, and she's trying to find Dr. Tumolo, her mentor. And she's running around in New Orleans. So under a streetlight, she sees Tumolo, comes up to her, and she's sort of like in this zombie state, just staring off into the distance. And then suddenly she springs to life, and she says, "Greer, hush, Greer, listen to me. My time is short. I have to warn you about the Renegade. I found out too late, but you must tell the others. The Ray, tell them Tabor has the Ray, and tell them goodbye." And then Tumolo just vanishes.
Okay. And that's the woman who turned her into Tigra.
Right.
Okay.
Right. The brilliant scientist that created the cat and then later Tigra.
Okay.
So then we're in part two, and they flash backwards to the dude who got himself indebted. What's his fucker's name? Dr. Richard Dannemiller. And apparently this guy is one of the cat people, but he's been living among humanity for too long. He's not comfortable. He's not comfortable with crowds. He's not really comfortable in his own skin or in his false skin. And it just happens to be Mardi Gras, so there's all this stuff going on. It's freaking him out. He can't concentrate. And he's trying to get something to Dr. Tumolo. I think it was the Ray. And just as he's getting to where he's supposed to be, he's attacked by some weird creature in a yellow and red cape with a really tall collar, like a Doctor Strange collar.
Okay.
And so this dude just starts wailing on the guy and clawing him and stuff. Cat people don't kill each other. Never. It's sort of like the whole Dr. Moreau rule.
Yeah.
And this dude kills the dude. The cat, the cougar kills. Wait, the cougar? No. Sorry,
no. I'm always gonna the Renegade.
What's this fucker's name again?
I thought it was the Renegade.
We're going to call him the Renegade. That helps. So then we jump to a flash forward to part three. And they're really freaking. I think what happened is they wrote this sort of like a screenplay and assumed that everybody would understand when they flash backward and flash forward. And it wasn't that well done. So they felt they need to put chapter one, chapter two, part three. But it's like this little bullshit block. It doesn't look like it was well planned. So all of a sudden, oh wait, no, it's still a flashback. It's just the second half of the flashback. It's fucking confusing. So Tigra is hooking up with the cat people, who I'm pretty sure for the first time ever now live in New Orleans.
Well, the cat were people, yeah.
Yeah, I think they were on the West Coast because the cat was in Chicago, if I remember correctly. The cat series, I think, was set in Chicago.
Okay.
Then I thought that Werewolf by Night was set in California, and now she's in New Orleans, so I don't know what the fuck.
So now she's in the South.
But now all the cat people who are supposed to have their own island, too. Do they have islands in Louisiana?
Maybe offshore? Or maybe small human islands.
Yeah, see, I thought they were on an island off of the California coast. Anyway, so these guys are living in New Orleans, and it looks like they're living in like a secret fortress in a sewer system or some weird-ass shit like that that you only find in comic books. And so they go and they retell the origin of Tigra, and they tie this into some Thor story involving the High Evolutionary. Let's see, Tabor was originally an inhabitant of the mysterious city of Wundagore. In cowardice, he fled when war broke out. Tabor felt no compulsion to defend his homeland alongside the noble knights of Wundagore. With the aid of the god of Thunder, Tabor's creator, the High Evolutionary, repulsed the insurrection. The rebel leader, the evil man beast, was banished to space with his legions of animal men. Then, as Tabor watched in astonishment, Wundagore departed the earth. He was left alone in a hostile world of humans. Editor's note: these events were depicted in issues number 134 through 135 of Thor. Something in the turncoat's mind snapped then. He had been barely tolerated by the good citizen beasts of Wundagore. Still, it had been his home. Tabor pledged his life to destruction, a warped sense of revenge for his self-inflicted rejection. Thus did he wander to the earth, a scavenger and throwback predator. When we cat people found him, we took him in as one of our own. Tried to reclaim him. It didn't take. So I guess this guy's really a renegade. This guy was like a stray. Because he's not one of the cat people. He was with the Wundagore's people. The guys, because I guess he was with the same Animen that got sent to Counter-Earth. Like the man beast that fought Warlock in his older issues. Is that the same shit we're talking about?
I have no idea, dude.
Did you ever read any of the old Warlock stuff? The Gil Kane?
No, Roy I did, Thomas but stuff? I don't ever remember them.
You remember he fought the werewolf dude?
Yeah, but yeah. That was, oh no, I never read the Gil Kane. I really didn't start until Stargloom.
Okay, well, he fought this guy called the Man Beast, and it was all tied in the High Evolutionary. And in fact, they brought that character back during the early issues of the Warlock and the Infinity Watch back in the 90s. I think one of the first story arcs was him fighting that creature again.
Again.
And it had Rick Leonardi art, which is what made me drop the book, because I just had an irrational hatred of Rick Leonardi. Because it had started, Angel Medina was doing it, I think. And then Rick Leonardi came in to do fill-in work, and I didn't like the book as it was. And then once it switched to an artist that I didn't like, okay, I washed my hands of it. I never read Warlock and Infinity Watch ever again.
I think I got through like 6 issues.
So it turns out the renegade dude, the ray causes people to devolve. So he went to like a zoo and he hit the elephants and they turned into woolly mammoths, which is not how I think evolution works.
Yeah.
People become bears and he hits humans. The humans become primates. Okay. And his plan is to rule the earth once all the humans have been turned into primates and are no longer the dominant species of the planet. Tiger and the cat people try to fight him off and fight the zoological creatures. And the cat people get hit by the ray and he thinks that once they become giant saber-toothed cats, that they're going to turn and kill Tigra. But see, they know what their original mission was. They know what their instincts say. They know that Tigra is one of them. So instead, she commands her much more entigered people to go after the renegade dude. And so she knocks the renegade off of the woolly mammoth, which he's been riding while shooting the gun at people, the ray gun. Oh, by the way, the ray was supposed to turn Tigra back into a human being. That's why Dr. Tomolo had it.
Okay.
But then it got
like a cure.
Yeah, but then it got stolen by the renegade and turned into a devolution machine instead. So what I love is she knocks him off the woolly mammoth. They fall to the ground, and the guy says, "No one can recover from a fall as fast as Tabor. Now you die, Inferior One." Who the fuck brags about their falling abilities? He sounds like fucking Donald Trump. "I fall. I'm the best faller ever." You know?
Wow, you got political there quick.
So she gets a hold of the ray gun, and she shoots Tabor, and she's expecting him to also become a Sabretooth, but no, he becomes a pussycat. A Sabretooth I was ready to deal with. A Sabretooth. No, 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 meow. Or a pussycat. The High Evolutionary works in mysterious ways, his wonders to perform. Phalar and his men soon had everything under control. The world was going to be different now, for humans, cat people, and especially for me. I wish Joanna could be here to help us through. And the end, they actually have the renegade pussycat walking on the words, "The end."
That's definitely a 70s comic book, yes.
It has that horror anthology sort of feel to it, doesn't it?
So, okay, was she supposed to be so they turned her into a hero from her origins?
Well, remember, she was the cat.
Well, were-cat, though.
Well, no, but she was the cat superheroine. Then she became Tigra.
Okay.
And so they hit her with a ray that saved her life because of the radiation she took on, but it turned her into a werewoman permanently. So she would like to be turned back into a human being at this point.
Okay. I just assumed that maybe she at one point had a small stint as a villain.
No.
No? Oh, okay.
She just appeared in some really weird, sexually confusing horror her stories.
It's just crazy that she's in like a two-piece bikini in everything.
You're right. She never wears anything else but the bikini.
Yeah.
She's covered in fur. I guess she gets hot. But apparently she has...
But you wouldn't see nips, I'm assuming.
I don't know that that's a safe assumption. I've seen cats with big, long nipples. Maybe she's got like, you know, ridiculous...
You had very strange pets, man.
No, like a mommy cat. Mommy cats have those really long teats that their babies are suckling on. So maybe she has these ridiculous like bullet teats.
I now know why you have no pets. You should never own a pet. Please continue.
And it'd be funny too, like imagine how a cat's ass is where it's covered in hair and then you got this big pink spot.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what she's got down there and that's why she needs a bikini.
I'm assuming if she's a cat woman, she has more than one nipple.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's worth noting, huh? Maybe she's got like four on one breast and four on the other and that's what she's covering up. Suddenly she's not so attractive, huh? Or maybe it's sort of like some kind of hentai thing where it starts out looking like a human needle, a nipple, and then like shoots off into all these like a prickly little thing.
I'm just assuming that she got erect, the little nipples would just pop up her stomach.
Oh, this is getting really disturbing.
Yeah, we took it to a weird place. Let's reel it back in.
So what? Anything else? You have any other thoughts on this one though?
No, I mean it's a 70s comic. I mean I see where they're playing up the sex. It's kind of weird that it's in a Marvel comic too, because they're really playing up the sexy part of her. Like she's running around in a bikini. I'm trying to think of any other female heroes that ran around in a bikini. Now of course you had the intergalactic
ones. All of them though.
Well, no. You had like the intergalactic ones that would have like, you know, a flaming bikini. I get that. They would project a flaming bikini, but I can't think of any of them that
were...
Red
Sonja?
Marvel?
Red Sonja was published by Marvel.
No, I'm talking about the Marvel Universe, though. That was more of like a Conan
thing.
Well,
she was in Marvel Team Up Her Own Self.
I'm just trying to think like the Wasp.
She's one of those characters that had muddy rights.
I can't picture any of them running around in a two-piece bikini.
Miss Marvel was, for instance. Remember she had the midriff bearing outfit with the skirt?
Ain't she always in a onesie?
No, she had an open midriff. She basically
back in the 70s.
She had like the top with the cape and then an exposed midriff and then like short shorts.
Are you sure you're not mixing her up with Supergirl?
She got Supergirl dressed like that too, but Supergirl, I think, had hot pants at that time.
Okay. Well, so I have no dealings with Tigra, but she definitely has a strange origins.
Strange stories that she's bringing in. Here's the thing. I bought these comics, and one of the reasons why I was reading the comic at your birthday is I thought that we might record something sometime if things had died down, but that never really happened. Or I thought I might end up coming back the next day trying to do something that didn't happen. But the main issue was I read the story and it was terrible, the Marvel 2-in-1. It's just a bad story. It doesn't make a lot of sense. It's everything's done too simply. It's like, hey, we've jacked up the thing. How's the thing going to get out of this? He just rips his way out of it because he's strong.
Yeah.
You know, they don't even, it felt like a story that wasn't even trying. We've written our heroes into a corner. What's going to happen now? The character we introduced for two panels halfway through the story is going to shoot the bad guy. The end.
Yeah.
So it was really fucking lame. This one was a little bit more interesting a story, but it's still fucking gonzo as shit. I still think it's one of those stories they cranked out at the last minute. That's why it took two guys to plot it and one guy to script it and then two involved artists to draw it. They were probably just grinding this thing out because it doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense. What bothered me though is this is obviously just a one-off story. It's probably a way of just keeping Tigra in the public eye. Why would you fucking let them kill off her mentor figure in a one-off story? You know, Dr. Tomolo is the person who's the brilliant mind who created all these processes, created the cat, created Tigra. This is like your female Reed Richards and they fucking kill her off in a stupid one-off story. It just really bothered me. It's the typical kind of dude bullshit where they don't even think
it's
through.
It's the 70s, dude.
But it's like, and the thing is too, is they always pretty much irrevocably destroy any characters that she encounters. So she can't build up a rogues gallery and they just whacked a member of a supporting cast, the main member of a supporting cast in a one-off story. I mean, it just seemed really shitty to me.
Dude, it's the 70s. Like, is this a Frank's agenda thing now?
A little bit of Frank's agenda in there, yeah.
I was going to say, it feels Frank's agenda. It had that pungent smell of it.
That's why I didn't make you guys read these stories. They're not very good.
No, they're not very good.
Probably better that I just tell you what happened in it and do make my point and then we can move on.
Okay. They're entertaining.
What did you think about the art on the two that you flipped through there?
Oh, no. I like the art. I thought the art was really nice. Yeah.
I wasn't sure about, I wasn't a big fan of Don Heck inking Sal Buscema though.
No, I mean, dude, it's cool 70s art style. It's very simple.
You sure it's not just pinging your nostalgia?
I know a little bit. Oh, no, of course. But
I think that the second one, the Ernie Chan inks, I thought looked pretty nice.
Yeah, but like multiple colors. I don't know. It's definitely nostalgic for me. Yes. Because I don't see books like this very much nowadays.
Yeah. I like that simple coloring too. Well, on a lot of the podcasts I've been listening to recently, there's been some complaints about computer coloring and how it kind of overwhelms the art. And if you enjoy the line work, you're kind of losing the ability to see how good it is.
Yeah.
Because they're throwing all this coloring and digital effects all over everything.
All the cross
and everything's so overwhelming and overdone. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I do like the more simplistic look there. But I mean, the art's great. The art's fairly detailed. But I like the more basic color.
I'm thinking for a boy 15 with this.
Whew. Yeah, yeah. You smell that comic? Were any of the pages crunchy or stuck together?
God, no. I wish I didn't touch it. No. Oh, you sick bastard. I'm just saying, man. Like, she's running around in that tight little two-piece bikini, and there's a lot of scenes like there where she's kind of crouched over.
Yeah, she does all the cat-type stuff with splayed legs.
Bent-over scenes. I remember I was flipping through. I'm like, that's very peculiar.
It's provocative.
Yes. So, okay. We done with Tigra?
We're moving on to this one you read.
Oh, dude. It wasn't even worth it, man.
Marvel 2-in-1 was the Things team-up book. Marvel team-up is Spider-Man's team-up book. This is issue number 125, cover dated January 1983 by J.M. DeMatteis. Breakdowns by Cary Grammel. Full inks, finished art by Mike Esposito. The story is called Yesterday and Today. So what happened in this story, dude?
Tigra's apparently on her way to a photo shoot. She finds a police officer who's about to get his shit owned by a bunch of young punks in the neighborhood.
Yeah, they were like drinking behind a store. And he had already warned complaining.
She jumps back there. They're about to, wreck him. She jumps in, starts beating up some dudes. They all run like mice.
Oh, nice. I see what you did there.
No, she literally says that. I think I once seen it. Like running like
rats. I forgot to mean, in the Marvel 2-in-1, the thing kept dropping cat puns too. Really? So,
oh god, I'm not.
It's
the thing.
A catastrophe.
That I've read these books. Absolutely, yes, it was a catastrophe. She kind of has the hots for the cop. Basically, invites.
I should mention too, because you may not remember from the cat story, she was married to a cop.
Dude, you gave it away.
Oh, sorry. Well, go ahead.
Yeah,
keep talking.
In the book, she alludes that he passed away. So she kind of hits on the cop and gives him a kiss and says, "Hey, let's do dinner tonight." And he's like, "Okay, what time's your shift in?" 9 o'clock. So she takes off to do the shoot. It turns out that Spider-Man is also going to be part of the shoot.
Yeah, it's for his like tasty burger or something.
Yeah, some kind of weird burger. And so there's a little bit of a scuffle, and Spider-Man's like, you know what? Fuck this. I'm out. Deuce. And he decides to take off. So Tigra does the whole commercial. Kind of weird, creepy. Cat smile, eating a hamburger. Story.
Well, yeah, it's kind of funny because it looks like these guys were Carl's Jr. of their day.
Yeah, very provocative, eating a burger. So she's about to leave. Spidey comes back and he's got a little bit of a Spidey Woody for her. And he's trying to talk to her and she just totally blows him off like nothing. Just cuts him off. And he's kind of like, oh, I came at her like a adolescent with a crush.
He's no Cary Grant is what he says.
No, she didn't. No. See, he didn't get, she's into the uniform.
Mm-hmm.
Because she had to lose that. She's feeling lonely. You know, ain't that kitty hadn't been purred in a while. Hadn't been purred. In a while, so she's literally says, "I'm lonely." Like, somebody got to hit.
I'm lonely.
It's got to get hit. There's some dust growing on it, and so.
Well, and also too, they make a point of mentioning that Spider-Man had just broken up with Black Cat, and he thinks that he's on a self-destructive path, hitting on Tigra because he's trying to replace Black Cat with her.
Well, he likes a lot of cat, so.
Don't we all love the pussy?
So she kind of alludes that, she misses her beau who was an officer. And I'm telling you, it's the uniform, man. It's the badge. It's all about the badge. Some badge bunnies. And she runs into the cop. They go on a date. They're having fun. She's kind of flirty with them. And all of a sudden, they're attacked by, I don't remember his name. What did you say his name?
I think it's Zabo.
Is it Zabo?
So it's, cool. it's kind of a
cool design. He
kind of looks like the Absorbing Man, but more with dead eye.
Well,
I
love the fact that he doesn't have any pupils. So he just has this dead cold look. And so they're battling. And of course, they go into his origins, I'm assuming. Because apparently he's fought the cat. Let's see. Sent me back. Greer Nelson. His spirit would not let Zabo rest. Oh, give me a break, will you? So apparently someone she killed?
Yeah, in the cat's origin story... Zabo was the minion of Mal Donalbane. He's more like the Mountain is today in Game of Thrones.
Ooh, nice. Game of Thrones throw in there.
He's this big lumbering dude who is under the command of Mal Donalbane. Donalbane was the guy who was adulterating the cat project to create enhanced human beings that he was going to enslave. And he wears that collar to make it appear that he himself was also enslaved by Mal Donalbane. Now Zabo's back to take revenge for the death of the guy who was his keeper.
All right.
And the only person that was his friend and the only person who took care of him in life.
So just, I did read while we were at the convention a couple of loose floppies.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that Marvel has quite a few strange, like, the Ox, the Warriors, like, these low-level villains that aren't, like, Hulk strong or not even, like, Wrecking Crew strong. They're more along the lines of, like, a little strong.
Mm-hmm.
Like, enough to pick up a car and be threatening to normal people.
Yeah.
But
I think Ant-Man right now, he's working with a group like that.
Okay.
Like,
oh, I gotta
like some
that.
Guys who are, like, superior foes of Spider-Man or lower
C-level. They're like C-level.
Well, the main one I remember seeing in the pictures was the Grizzly.
Yeah. Well, actually, I read some of that old stuff. Yeah, where he hires the Grizzly to work for him. But so I was reading these individual books and then
the Kangaroo.
Yeah, like really weird, like all animals. levels, but like, yeah, but they weren't very strong.
You know, you're strong when you've got serpent based villains, amphibians the lizard.
I think as a
villain, once you work your way down to the ox.
What I was gonna say, if someone tells you you're the ox, you know you're fucked because you're like, I'm never gonna beat up the Hulk and I'm never gonna beat up Spider Man, but I'll probably beat up like I don't know Peter Parker. Like I get away with beating up a human.
You're gonna maybe fight a Darkhawk in your day if you're lucky.
Not even like Thrasher, dude. Like you're lucky.
Night Thrasher.
Yeah, like you're gonna take on Night Thrasher. That's like the best you got. The best shot you got of making a name, but you're never gonna go above that. So it's
when Rocket Racer doesn't give you the time of day, you know you haven't performed well in the goon squad.
I'm just saying, because I was sitting there reading these books and I was just thinking, oh my god, if someone looked at me and said, from this point on you will be known as the Walrus, I'm gonna be like, oh, I'm so fucked. I've mutated my body and they're calling me the Walrus. I'm gonna have to wear one with giant teeth and people are literally gonna go choo choo kadoo cuckoo cuckoo choo.
Yeah, they're gonna be, and you know you're gonna have to like bite people with the teeth, yeah,
and just,
or you're gonna pull the teeth
out. I intentionally did that so we don't get sued for a copyright infringement of the Beatle music.
Is it goo goo gajoob?
No, don't do it. They'll bankrupt us. What little money we have that we've collected off the floor.
But what I'm saying is Simon and Garfunkel, I think, did Goo Goo Gajoob, and the Beatles did Cuckoo Cuckoo.
Dude, really? You're going to frank me over this? Like, anything else, you're going to frank me over this. You can't let it go. Just fucking let it go, man. I was making a stupid, simple point that they're fighting Zeebo or Zubu, who is like
Zabo, I believe,
the ox slash walrus of this book. And the best he can do, well, no, I guess Tigra, he could take her out. They're about the same level.
Zabo or the walrus?
Any of these fuckers, they're all sea level, doesn't matter. I mean, dude, when you have to tell them your origins, like, those are the books I like whenever the villain's telling the origin and then the hero like beats the shit out of him or starts wailing on him with a car. And that's that cool moment where you're like, they're taking a swipe at these old books where they had to tell you everything, break down everything. They're battling. See, we got a
they're all still fighting in Twinkie the restaurant.
We're talking a Twinkie commercial. Okay, here we go. Zabo or Zeebo Zubu. I'm just going to call him Zeebo, like from Friday.
Is he like into Zuba? Is Zabo into Zuba?
No, actually, you know what? He has a cool look. I would have called him like the Ruski or something like that. Like calling him Zeebo, he's already fucked. He's an ox.
I wonder if the restaurant they're fighting in is Zanzibar.
Oh, man, I don't know. I wouldn't read that far into it. It's bad enough you're making me read this. So they're battling, and guess who pops up? Spider-Man. And Spidey starts whipping some ass, so he already knew he's fucked.
Well, see, Spidey had seen the guy walking down the street, and he was this great big lumbering dude in a trench coat and a jacket. So for once, somebody recognized, hey, that's probably a supervillain. People in trench coats and giant hats in 1983 are probably bad guys or Ninja Turtles.
True. Ninja Turtles. And so they're battling. Dude has some kind of fucking panic attack, starts running away.
Which dude?
Zeebo. Zeebo gets away.
Zeebo?
Yeah, Zeebo from Friday. He has a panic attack. He makes a run for it. There's Spidey. Now, the guy who had got the photo shoot together earlier comes running down the street. Oh, no. I pray that the news reports were wrong. But they weren't. What's an old man, Crenshaw, going to say about this? And basically, he's throwing up a big fit. Tyra tells him, like, deuce, I'm out of here. Spidey turns around, webs him in the face. He's like, and then webs him, and a dude has like web all over his face, and he's trying to scream. He goes, go web. And that's the sound it makes. It really does make that sound. Go web,
thwip,
chaunters away. You know, I've never heard an ad man make more sense. And of course, the cop is there, left from dinner, didn't get no ass, had his dinner ruined. He's probably gonna have to pay for all this.
Well, look, but hold on, there's a little bit of Frank's agenda in there, and you missed it. You didn't mention the part. Okay, so Tigra and the cop are in the restaurant talking to each other. And she's talking about how she was married to a cop and how whatever aspirations she'd had before she got married, she suppressed so that she could make him as happy as possible. And his response is like, that doesn't sound so bad. I'd like that. I like the old fashioned kind of gals. So let you know right off the bat, okay, this is a fucking chauvinist pig asshole. So that's why she gets invalidated as a date.
He's like, my woman takes a nice right hand when that steak ain't cooked right.
Right.
Right when, like daddy used to do.
And that's what helps, I think, once she gets done with Zabo, that helps her to realize that she was also on a self-destructive path trying to relive her past. Oh my god,
you're going feminist, aren't you?
No. I was just saying, the whole point of the story is that you've got people who are living in past situations. Because the other thing you missed is that everybody's fighting Zabo at first, except Tigra. Tigra's really just evading Zabo and trying to talk to him. The cop goes and gets his cop buddies, and they're getting ready to gun Zabo down.
Yeah, I missed that part.
And Spidey has to go in there and web him and keep him from shooting him. Tigra's just trying to communicate with him instead of fighting him.
She wants to know his feelings. How's he feeling?
Well, he's feeling like he needs to avenge his former employer and his only friend, Mal Donalbain. And she keeps explaining, Mal Donalbain killed himself. He got freaked out and shot himself in the head in the story. She didn't kill him. He killed himself. And he was an abusive fuck. And he's not somebody you would need to avenge. And then Zabo reveals, but he was my brother.
Dun, dun, dun.
And so she explains, but he was this abusive person. And you've got your own life now. And you've got to live your own life. And don't try to take revenge on something when there's no revenge to be taken.
And you've committed several felonies. So run.
Well, right now he's just like wrecked a restaurant.
An officer?
He might have slapped an officer. Well, but so did fucking Spider-Man. They didn't arrest him either.
Damaging property, going through a building, assault.
Well, he ran away, so they probably should have taken in Tiger and Spider-Man panic attack, for aiding and abetting.
Panic attack doesn't count. The dude had like a panic attack. He's like, the illusion. Oh, shit. And he just runs, screaming. Where's my Zoloft?
Tiger actually communicates with this guy instead of just punching him. And not only does she save his life, but she, like, the absolute, just like the spark of life. He's not dead, gunned down by cops like fucking King Kong. But also, he's now realized that the life that he was avenging wasn't worth living. And he can maybe go off and do something productive with the rest of his life.
And see, so, and that's where this book missed their swing at the fences. Right when she finished that speech, she lights her bra on fire because she is woman and they are free. And you got free nude scene with multiple teeth.
What'd you think of the art?
That was okay.
See, I got excited when I saw the credit because I love Cary Gamble's artwork. But then it was just looser pencils, so it kind of looks like Cary Gamble, but mostly it just looks like a standard issue 1983 Spider-Man comic. And I like that DeMatteis was trying to get into the characters and kind of try to figure out a story to tell with them that was atypical. But it is sort of namby-pamby, feel-good, hippie granola kind of stuff, too.
They're not going to Millar it.
Yeah.
Millar's not around yet. So, yeah, I don't think I could have been reading books at this time. Now, you said this is what, 1980 what?
Three.
Okay, so that's about the time the X-Men are super hot, right? Because they're a little bit darker.
This was, in 1983, I think it was Paul Smith doing the book.
Okay, so it's darker. The story's
much more complex, yeah. Okay,
so yeah, you can kind of see the spectrum of where books were at the time. Like, if I was going to go to the newsstand and I was going to pick up a X-Men comic compared to this one, yeah, I'm going to X-Men all the way.
Yeah, but that's not a fair comparison. I would say that this is probably more sophisticated than most anything DC was putting out, for instance. But it's still kind of ham-fisted and clumsy, well-intentioned, but not the best constructed story, not the most
satisfying. So you would say these stories were written for children?
Well, yeah, they all were. Well, nah, I mean, teenagers. Especially the fucking...
Maybe preteens?
The bikini, man. They were selling that bikini.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I think it was well-intentioned, and I appreciated that, unlike with the Marvel Adventure story, instead of taking something away from Tiger's background, they enhanced her. They gave her an opportunity to solve the problem in a way that guys wouldn't, you know. She's trying to use her brain and emotions rather than her fists. And I like that they actually made a point of going back to her very first story and explaining that she was the cat, and this was a guy who was from that very first adventure, giving a resolution to that story where she doesn't just leave this poor guy to die, because he like ran into some equipment and appeared to get electrocuted. And instead of just leaving him, they didn't just kill him off and blow him off. They actually went back and did a callback to that story, which was nice because it showed that the guy actually did some research and knew who this character was and wanted to explore her history as far as how far she'd come from that first story. Okay. It was an all right story. It's just, like I said, it's a little hammy, and it's definitely of its time.
No. Okay, next.
Where can we start?
We like them dumb and we like them smart.
I like the ones with the pretty eyes.
Well, I like all kinds of guys.
Stop.
Now, both the short-lived Cat series and the various Tiger appearances have been covered on the podcast before. And correct me if I'm wrong, but it kind of turned you onto the character, right?
Yeah. You know, I have had very limited exposure to Tigra in the past, and I just always assumed that she was always a cat woman. And so listening to the podcast where you talked about her origins and really having worn what I thought was the Hellcat costume all along and how she became sort of more cat-like was really interesting to me. And there was a lot more meat on the bone than I anticipated. I just always assumed she was, oh yeah, every universe needs a cat person. And my prior exposure to her had always been that she really wasn't that interesting other than her look. So when you guys were talking about it, I was like, this is really sort of interesting. And then, as luck would have it, I've gone to a lot of comic book stores with a lot of dollar boxes. And so over the course of that time, I've actually picked up Marvel Chillers 5 and 6, and even that Marvel Premiere
one that you were talking about. It's not a bad story. I think at some point I actually tweeted to all of you guys different panels from it because it played a lot on the woman scientist who guided her career early on.
Dr. Tomolo?
Yeah, and fighting that male cat, that character that sort of thwarted her at the beginning.
So out of curiosity, what was your prior experience with Tigra?
Yeah, you know, it's very vivid. I'm sure that you have similar memories that, you know, when you're a kid in that 7 to 10 year age and you see something that grabs you, it sort of sticks with you. It's one panel in one of the Marvel team-ups. And I will tell you that a Marvel team-up was pretty much an entry drug for me for the greater Marvel Universe. It's Marvel team-up number 61, Spider-Man and the Human Torch fight the Super Skrull. And there's one panel of Tigra slinking into one of the windows of the Baxter Building with this Native American totem stick that has basically sucked the Super Skrull's soul into it, which actually happened in the Marvel Chiller story. And that is a Marvel team-up issue that's drawn by John Byrne with, I think, inks by Terry Austin. And she just looked really wild. Dave Hunt is the inker. She just looked beautiful and mysterious and cat-like. So that one panel was like, wow, she seems really cool. And then I kind of never saw her again until, believe it or not, the John Byrne West Coast Avengers run, which was one of the very few Marvel runs that I bought at that time. And that's when she was slowly sort of devolving into truly a cat. And that was really my only interaction with the character before listening to your podcast.
Did you become a DC kid fairly early on?
Pretty early on. And I think a lot of it has to do with what was available to me and what really struck me. So I always say that, you know, my first comic ever was a Legion of Superheroes comic. And it was from that book that my love for the Legion came, and then my extended love for the Superman family came. And so pretty early on, those were the only books, or most of the books, that I was getting. I always loved team-up books, so I did get a lot of Marvel team-up during that time. But for a kid that grew up in like the early 80s, I didn't read any of that X-Men stuff that's so proclaimed. I just didn't even know that stuff existed.
Yeah, it was crack in the early 80s, but if you were around before then and knew enough to just say no, you were probably better off.
Yeah, I think my first encounter with the X-Men, believe it or not, and you're going to be like, really, dude? I mean, I may have interacted with them, you know, in some issues, but the first story that I got was the Teen Titans X-Men crossover.
Oh, well, being a DC guy, you was your gateway.
Yeah.
Out of curiosity, having picked up a bunch of these earlier Tigra stories, do you have buyer's remorse, or are you actually fairly happy with what you've read?
No, I'm pretty happy with what I've read, I got to say. The earlier stuff, I think, mostly because I think I'm in that nostalgia phase of my life, seems better suited for me in terms of my enjoyment. So those Marvel Chiller stuff, I'm also a huge Super Skrull fan, so that's like peanut butter and chocolate to me. And it's not as if I've stopped looking. So, you know, every time I'm in a dollar box and I'm flipping through and there's Tigra, I'll be like, oh, I should buy this. And I actually have, there were boxes of comics that I have that aren't bagged and boarded, that are just sort of loose for quick consumption. And there's like a Tigra section in one of those boxes. So I kind of have them all together so I can sort of grab them.
Every time I hear you say Tigra, I keep hearing Tigra and Bunny, and we like the boom.
Yeah, we like the cars. I love that song.
Boom.
Perfect. I hope I held up my side of the board.
You were great. You were great. Had a lot of fun with it. I'll try to piece together curse words and plug them into your section just to make sure it fits with the rest of the show. Okay, C-U-N. I can't find the... Anyway.
Well, thanks, dude. I'm so happy that we did this because, like you said, I think we should have done this long ago.
I absolutely enjoyed this, and we absolutely should have been doing this before. We're definitely going to do it in the future.
Perfect.
All right, I'm going to let you go. I know you got stuff to do. Take care, and I'll talk to you next time.
Yeah, thanks so much. Thanks. Bye-bye.
I got to talk to writer Chris Claremont at this last Sunday's Amazing Con Houston, and asked him about a number of the female characters that he worked on in the 1970s, including Tigra. And for the most part, he just admitted that they were paycheck gigs, that Roy Thomas would be at the front of a room asking who wanted an assignment. He'd raise his hand, collect the check. No real insights of the character of Tigra. The only thing he said about Satana was that with the red hair, she kind of looked like Jean Grey. And he mentioned that he thought that Lady Damon actually belonged to Michael Golden. I'd have to check the copyright on that. But apparently the whole whole concept was Golden's. He called Golden brilliant, and he said he basically just scripted that. On the Marvel Superheroes podcast, episode 61, The Mighty Thor, we received Facebook likes from Grant Richter, Keith G. Baker, and Ali Batts. Ali Batts wrote, "Oh man, way too many laughs. It's on my top five." Keith G. Baker wrote, "I always had his name in my head as spelled as Frijoles, but with an Americanized pronunciation. That it's fry hole is even better." And Grant Richter wrote, "Odin Force." We received a Google Plus share from Keith G. Baker, and new Twitter follows from hashtag Potter and Family, 2020.fm, Aaron C. Barber, Act Out Games, Andrew Dykes, Angie Denise, David Taylor 2, Horror by Proxy, Justin Colucci, Cotton Grammar, Nerd on Nerd Podcast, Rodney Salisbury, Tattooed Bananas Podcast, and Tim Allen Fire. We received a follow Friday from Superman, Captain Marvel, Build Us as Rolled Spines Houston Hooligans, and hashtag Monday Madness and hashtag Team Thursdays from Adam Black Moon. Retweets came from Ange, Comic Reflections, Firestorm Fan, King Size Comics Giant Size Fun Podcast, Longbox Crusade, Professor Alan Middleton, The Randomitable, Ryan at Positively Nerdy, and Superman Captain Marvel, as well as favorites from Adam Black Moon, Bill Bear, Brandon Molali, Cinemystique, David Fior, David Galayer, David Golding, Fire and Water Network, Glenn Walker, Jesse Fernandez, Kevin Culp, Martin Gray, Monsters and Mystics, Now That I'm Older, Poop Culture Podcast, Raven M. Fields, Ryan Daly, Steven Whistler, Oofta at Fry Hole Yeah, and Words and Pictures.
We like the cars that go boom. We're Tigra and Bunny, and we like the boom.
The following are friends of old Marvel: Andrew in Belfast, Cash Flag, Chris Sheehan, Darren and Ruth Sutherland, Eric Mannix, FKA Jason, Goldmine Productions, Jake and Tom Conquer Podcast, Julia Clavian, Kevin Dodgy, Michael Dabb, Mikey Flash, Movie Source Rex, Open All Powers Podcast, Oscar Blue Devil, The Park Fanatic Podcast, Pietro Blaximoff, Rabbit Stew Comics, Randy Caldwell, Richard Field, Son of Cthulhu, Trucker Talk Podcast, and Warlord Worlds Podcast. And finally, the Merry Marvel Marching Society, The 108th Sage, Bone Dragon Comics, Coffee and Comics Blog, Dr. G Nerdologist, Good Times Great Movies Podcast, The Hammer Strikes, It's Plastic Man, Keith G. Baker, Odell Abner Dracula, Sean McLaughlin, Silver and Gold Podcast, Storm Chaser 2162, Cinedavia Scarecrow, and the Xenozoic Xenophiles. The Marvel Superheroes Podcast is in no way affiliated or endorsed by Marvel Entertainment. All characters mentioned and audio clips employed are believed covered under fair use, but remain copyright their respective copyright holders. But of course, the views expressed are wholly owned by the people who spoke them. No infringement is intended. Like cars. I just can't stop. Cars and go boom. We're Tigra and Bunny, and we like them. Oh, shoot. Did I not do the wiki thing? Ah, shoot. Hold on a second. Well, you can tell I'm keeping it safe. Oh, shoot. Oh, shucks. Golly gosh darn.
Listen, dude. Just be yourself. It'll be a better podcast playing if we do that.
Okay. Let's see.
You know, don't cut out anything that you think will be interesting.